Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. It's the first Kudzu Vine of the year, January 4th. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
And welcome back, Catherine, from I guess a two-week hiatus.
I'm back, and I'm glad to be back. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, you were at holiday parties, I guess. You know, you must have been celebrating Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, any holiday they're holding.
Yeah, it was just funny how I kept having these Sunday night parties to go to. It was great. I went to two really wonderful parties, and I'm sorry I missed the show, but I'm glad that I was able to go to those parties.
And you'll be glad to know, Catherine, I didn't call you lazy, and Tim didn't call you lazy. Since I got called lazy over the summer when I took a two-week break. So we'll try to play a little nicer than we did this summer. Well, Georgia politics heating up a little bit, still kind of slow. We, you know, of course, discussed that. But there's enough going on nationally with some of these other states to keep us busy. But Georgia politics, one person we didn't probably think we were going to hear a lot out of, she makes news overseas. Cynthia McKinney is on a blockade running boat over in the Middle East. She's channeling her inner Rhett Butler. Catherine, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, the whole situation in the Middle East is so volatile. I often wonder. I mean, I've thought about this a lot. There's been a big thread on Blog for Democracy about it, which I followed sort of randomly this weekend because I was out of town. But it's so volatile. I question the wisdom of someone so visible getting involved in it. But, you know, she obviously had her reasons to do it, and you know, she did take a great personal risk, and, you know, I really can't comment on why she did it or what her intentions were, aside from maybe just bringing some attention to the situation. She certainly did that. I know a lot of people think she's crazy. I think she's pretty crazy, too, but I also have a lot of respect for her. She did bring things up when she was in Congress. She did bring things to the forefront that weren't being discussed, and oftentimes she was right in retrospect. So I can't criticize her for that.
Yeah, I know that there's two things kind of going on here. One, the humanitarian aid. You know, that's something I guess a lot of people can respect. But the fact that it was, you know, kind of against Israel, from what I understand, and given that her and her father's past with Israel kind of, you know, making kind of controversial comments, particularly her father, it kind of, I guess, plays into that whole theme. Tim, what was your take on this?
Well, you know, I got to agree with Catherine on one thing. Cynthia McKinney, as a member of Congress, always did seem to vote the right way. And it's really too bad what has happened with her, and I got to think that this blockade running boat could have done what it needed to do without the benefit of having Cynthia McKinney on board to make matters probably a little bit worse. So I got to figure, you know, let me play the evil twin here, and you guys take your pick. Was it a publicity stunt? Or is this woman just a nut?
I don't know what the end game is for. I obviously gets her name in the news, but then, I mean, if she's trying to further a, you know, more legitimate political career, I don't see how this helps her in any way. So I guess it's not part of that. But I tell you what, you were right, Catherine, about it having such, it was 83, 84 responses. It had to be quite a thread. People, you know, staying interested in it. So obviously it's something people, that's on their minds. And it was really on Georgians' minds that really didn't become much of a national thing. I mean, it got a little bit of coverage, but it certainly wasn't, you know, wasn't going to, you know, knock the Roland Burris nomination off the front pages of national blogs or anything. But worth discussing. One that I had completely forgot to send John the notes, but I think it's important to talk about is, it's kind of a two-parter. One, there's a Representative Tim Bearden from Villarica talked about making the death penalty, you can have to have 10 of 12 instead of 12 of 12 to have the death penalty. And, of course, this is kind of a snap reaction to the Brian Nichols trial. But then I heard another interesting point. Republican State Senator Preston Smith is kind of holding the line against this in the Senate, which is kind of unexpected to see his opposition. I don't know if he's made any public statements on it, but that's at least what the conservatives were all mad at Preston Smith. So it's kind of interesting and fun in a way to see those two sides go at it. Tim, what do you think of this?
Well, you know, Preston Smith, you know, for a living for a long time until recently, he was a criminal defense attorney, David. I know a lot of attorneys because my wife works in the legal profession. So many of them, and I don't know if Preston is, I don't think he is generally, but so many of them have reservations about the death penalty because of what they do for a living. And so I'm not really surprised that it would be a criminal defense attorney that would come to the forefront on this, even though he happens to also be a Republican member, or conservative member, rather, of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, because I think you're right about him being his legal background, you know, somewhere he feels, hey, it should be a 12-12 case, because I don't think I've ever heard where he's, you know, anti-death penalty. So it's just kind of interesting. But, you know, usually the Republican line is, you know, from, like a Waffle House cook. Well, Catherine, what do you make of this?
I just have a really hard time with these guys who, you know, consider themselves, you know, good Christians being in favor of, you know, any death penalty, but then limiting it to, you know, 10 instead of 12, you know, not having to have a unanimous decision on it. And I'm sure that, Tim, you're absolutely right, I'm sure it has to do with being an attorney and knowing what we all know, even those of us who follow these things who are not attorneys, who know how many people have been put to death who have later been found out were not guilty. So, you know, I praise him for his commitment to justice, I guess.
Yeah, and you're right about the Christian thing, although I tell you, a lot of folks, it seems like, that are more Republican-leaning, that are, you know, Christian faith, they kind of, you know, take that more Old Testament approach. But and I guess one of my oppositions to the death penalty is, a lot of times, and it comes from religious background, is, you know, you never know when somebody's going to be saved. What if God's plan is they're going to be saved on, you know, in February 1st, December, 2011, and you put them to death in 2010? You know, they couldn't be saved, so you didn't give them all their time on earth in which God could have done his work. And
Can I jump in there with a couple of points, David? Number one, we know that the death penalty has never been proven to be a general deterrent to crime. So let's get that off the table right now. Another thing, it has always interested me that those who are strong proponents of the death penalty are also pro-life. It don't make sense. It looks like if they would be one, they'd be the other, you know, the same. And the final thing I want to mention about this, if they were to pass this law, would this law not end up in the court system being challenged?
Oh, it would be challenged. Are you kidding
me? Right,
there'd
be more money paid on that. And I think if you're like, oh, this is a problem for X number of cases, then it's one thing, but it is just those few high-profile cases like Brian Nichols, and, I mean, how many Brian Nichols are really going to come along. I mean, we hope never again, but, I mean, this is like a few time and a lifetime situation for not only probably Georgia, but the whole South, if not the whole nation, that you're going to see anything quite like this.
If we're going to change the law on account of that one case, then are our legislators saying that they no longer trust a 12-person jury of their peers to do the right thing in our system?
Yeah,
yes,
I think exactly.
They're saying that.
It kind of fits in with what the super majority for tax legislation. You know, it's kind of like, you know, we know a majority, you know, that we can't keep control of just the 50 plus one or in this case, you know, it's like, let's make sure that we can, you know, put the, you know, the numbers in our favor. I see it.
Well, that's that whole culture there, David. It's like Sonny Perdue sending those, what do they call them, hawks into all of those committee meetings to make sure that the vote goes their way.
Now, that's Glenn Richards, if I'm not mistaken. We got to blame the right.
I was thinking Sonny Perdue pushed that law.
I was thinking it was Glenn Richardson.
I think you're right. I think it was Glenn Richardson.
Yeah, it was when he
okay.
But still, I mean, who's to say if Sonny Perdue, he may, oh, that's a great idea. You know, I wish I'd have thought of it first. that may be what he thought, you know. But I guess staying in Georgia, in the city of Atlanta, the city municipal race is coming up this November. Ann Favre, she got in and won an election. I believe she
by
replaced
six votes.
Kathy Woolard. Well, her original election, she won by a little more than six votes, but then she had a tough re-election against, and she's a homosexual, and she had another homosexual opponent. This time, she has drawn another opponent, a log cabin Republican. You're being the city dweller. Catherine, what do you make of this? Why does Ann Favre have such opposition?
I'm not sure why Ann Favre has opposition, except that there's not a lot of opportunities to run for city council, so people want to run. It's a pretty good job. You know, it's a well-paying job. It's a important, high-profile position. So, I mean, I think people want to run for it. And but this guy, I mean, he has only lived in Georgia for, like, 2 years, I think. And I mean, he's sort of a study in dichotomy. You know, he's a log cabin Republican. He claims, you know, he's a gay man. He's out. You know, he's not in the closet. But he's opposed gay marriage, and he has been critical of some of the transgender behavior in St. Louis when he lived there. So he's kind of a weird, I don't know him. I can't say, but I don't think he's got a chance. I just don't think he's got a chance.
Yeah,
I mean, Republicans don't do that well in the city of Atlanta. Even though it's a nonpartisan race, people will know that he was a log cabin Republican when he lived in Missouri and when he lived here.
I guess the fact that it's a city council race where more people, you know, are more informed, particularly if it's a race that's not somehow, you know, or to get, I don't know what the runoff situation is, where it was not then paired with the mayor's race, which will have the highest turnout. But it was kind of interesting that, you know, it seems like she's always got these tough races and a, you know, a single-digit victory. I mean, that is, that's quite hard to pull off is to, you know, win a race by that few votes. I mean, my goodness, even the some of the recounts we've been seeing, you know, they change with bigger margins than that.
Oh, yeah, and that was a you know, down-to-the-wire challenge, too. There were, you know, there were votes that were not read well. You know, they had to, you know, analyze the ballots, and it was quite a, you know.
Get up the magnifying glass and
yeah,
hold it up
exactly.
To the light. Well, Tim, any thoughts on this?
Well, I have a quick thought, and it's this man, of course, is a log cabin Republican. We know what that means. And even though it's a nonpartisan race, what will happen should this man seek the help of prominent Georgia Republicans in this race?
That would be interesting to see. Would they come around and support him?
Yeah.
Because they
yeah.
want to get a seat.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we know how conservative Georgia Republicans are, okay? And
yeah,
I just wonder what they would do.
Yeah, it's real funny when he talks about, you know, I saw the comments where he talked about, you know, different communities looking, you know, putting things in a bad light. And it's real interesting. I remember that seeing a log cabin Republican in Georgia site that had pool party pictures. And it was the strangest set of pictures on a political website. It was, you know,
Oh, my goodness.
It's the very group he's going to hope to get his base from. The group, the type of thing he criticized, you know, maybe in Missouri, Vladimir Republicans function one way, in Georgia they function another. Catherine, do you remember the pool party pictures?
No, I don't. I never looked at the Vladimir Republicans.
Oh, God.
Well, I look at every political site just to get a good sense of what's what, and I just saw the pool party pictures. And this was probably before the days of blogs, because I can only imagine if you know, Blog for Democracy, Peach Pundit, Tondi Saverin would have been around then. you know, what would have, that might have been a 83 count. But speaking of blogs, in the second half hour, John Flack is going to be our featured guest. He's going to come on and talk about the new Tondi Saverin. So we'll kind of hold. Comes on. But I guess let's move to another state in the South, Louisiana. Louisiana politics is always interesting in our regular contributor Ryan from the Daily Kingfish has written two articles kind of about the same politician with different angles on it this week, David Vitter. Now, if those of y'all that haven't been following, you know, David Vitter is one of my favorite whipping posts because I find him to be one of the most hypocritical politicians in the United States Senate. You know, a guy that was frequenting prostitutes. I still don't understand how he's still in the Senate, you know, without resigning, and, you know, a person like Elliot Spitzer did, even though I'm glad Elliot Spitzer resigned, I just wish Vitter would do the same thing. But this guy, he's running for re-election, no shame about him. Well, let's first tackle that. Tim, what do you think about David Vitter having the gall to run for re-election?
Yeah, and the interesting thing, where are the social conservatives going to come down on this thing, David? You saw the name Tony Perkins jump out of that article. It jumped right at me. I mean, that's the dude from the Family Research Council. If those social conservatives get out after this guy, they may really try in a very hard way to knock him off in the primaries. We've seen that done in some other states, and I wouldn't put it past them for that to happen in Louisiana.
Yeah, that's it would be interesting to see, especially with the electorate changing there, and what would that mean? Who knows? Would it be a kind of thing where they knock him off and the given the shift, that becomes the de facto senator, or does it depend on who we recruit? Catherine, your first thought on him running again?
Well, it's Louisiana. I mean, everybody runs. People run in Louisiana. You know, I mean, I think it's ridiculous, but, you know, it doesn't seem to, nothing seems to stop anyone from running in Louisiana.
So you have subscribed to the Russell Long theory of there's only two things that can get you in trouble, Louisiana: a dead girl and a live boy. And
that's right.
If you try to keep them alive, you can't get in trouble. And so, it just given so, you know, and I harp on this, I get on the national show with Kevin Ross, and it's just, you got him, you got Larry Craig, there's another one that escapes me. All these characters keep running. And then the people like Spitzer and McGreevy, you know, they resign. And it's kind of like we hold ourselves to the higher standard, even though everybody considers us the socially, morally loose party. We seem to hold ourselves to a higher standard, although, of course, our governor from Illinois is not doing us any favors, but all of his is not sexual.
Don't you think that Vitter, first of all, has a major, major problem keeping the nomination in his own party?
I hope he does. I mean, I'll actually have respect, a lot of respect to the Louisiana voters if they put their money where their mouth is. I mean, you know, you can have more conservative views than me, but if you have them and you keep them and you stand by them, I can respect that a whole lot more than I can hypocrisy, where you're saying you have these values and then you support and, you know, call this guy the leader of your party. But then there's some angles here on this guy. One angle that they noticed was they talked about Rodney Alexander, the Democratic then Republican congressman. They were talking about him. Ryan was talking about him possibly challenging David Vitter as a Democrat. How do you think that would go over with Democrats, Catherine? Rodney Alexander switching back to run for the state
again. But these party switchers, you know, I have no patience for them. I just have no patience for them. There's no other indicator of opportunism than switching parties like that. And hopefully the, you know, voters in Louisiana will see that too.
Yes. I mean, you'd have to hope we'd recruit a better candidate. And the switch is one thing, but the switch and the re-switch,
yeah,
you really have to wonder about them. And that's totally the party of me opportunism. But then, of course, you know, I guess if you had to vote between a party switcher and just a total hypocrite, I guess, you know, Rodney Alexander becomes lesser two evils. Although I will tell you through the grapevine, I have heard that Rodney Alexander is not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Again.
Some time ago off the record, but it's been so long ago, I guess I'm just saying it.
Well, I don't understand why he would switch in a state that seems to be at least moderately trending GOP, one of the few states in the country that still is. Why would he switch unless he saw it as his only path to the ballot in November? Otherwise, I couldn't even understand a re-switch.
But you got to think, look how poorly Republicans are doing, even in places they look safe. And that, you know, people, you know, for instance, Saxby Chambliss, he didn't have a sex scandal going on around him. You add a sex scandal to Saxby Chambliss, he's not a senator right now. I mean, the fact that, you know, I guess people could say, hey, personally, he kept his own home business under check, from what we know. You know, that's one thing I guess he had going for him, or not going against him, you might say. So, I mean, this, I guess you're thinking, hey, the climate, you know, people want more Democrats. And, of course, to me, you know, they always say when people are hurting, they start to realize that Democrats are what they need. It's when they, you know, get in good times, they don't realize what Democrats brought it to them. But maybe people in Louisiana, you got to think if they're hurting anywhere, they got to be hurting in Louisiana. I guess the other thing about this is on this host committee for Vitter, and it was a very healthy host committee, was Bennett Johnson, the former Democratic, or former senator, who, from all intents and purposes, who knows a Democrat, and he, you know, he supported Mary Landrieu fully when he retired, but he is supporting David Vitter through his being on the host committee. I was a bit shocked. Tim, what was your initial thought?
I was a bit shocked myself, David. I don't really know what to make of that yet.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing about those host committees, sometimes we find out later that they really didn't agree to do that.
Yeah,
that's a possibility.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying I don't know anything about this one in particular, but I know that happened with a couple of races in Georgia where people, you know, I mean, from what I understand, there were people who said, you know, you met someone, the candidate met someone at a cocktail party and said, oh, I hope I can have your support. And the person said, oh, yeah, you know, I can probably support you. And then all of a sudden they showed up on their website as an endorsement. So I think, I mean, I don't know if that's the case with this, but it is something that does happen.
Yeah.
All right, let's say this guy legitimately, though, did this. What in the world would his angle be, being the only Democrat and a high-profile one on this host committee?
Yeah, I mean, especially Vitter. I mean, you know, if this is the – say it was, what's Jindal running for election?
Yeah,
those
are two different animals.
But this character, I mean, there's just nothing to me that
– Vitter is the kind of guy people in his own party want to run away from.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, personally, he's got scandal. Politically, he's in the minority. You know, what real power does he have in the national scene? Now, I guess, you know, getting things done, I guess. But then, you know, you still have Mary Landrieu you can go to. You have Charlie Molossaw. You have, let me think, there's one more Democratic congressman in Louisiana. Although there is, the Democrats lost two in Louisiana from earlier this year, so it is getting a little further down the list. But, you know, it's just interesting to watch. And I guess as Louisiana politics unfolds, we'll have to have Ryan come back and tell us more. I guess the big story of the day in Southern politics, Terry McAuliffe is fully announced he's going to run for Senate, run for governor of Virginia. Catherine, what's your initial thought on this?
I'm not a big fan of Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. More power to him, I guess.
Yeah, it is, because he's pretty proud to say he's from Syracuse and he's from New York. I don't exactly know everything about his residency, but, you know, Virginia's a little trickier state, I guess, than when he gets in the areas downstate in which
I think it's going to be hard
Mark
for him.
Warner did well in. What were you saying, Catherine?
I think it's going to be hard for him, but he probably knows more about it than we do.
Yeah, one thing I think we can all agree on, I don't think he'll have trouble raising money. Tim, what
no.
do you think?
That was the first thing I was going to say as far as residency. He's been a Virginia resident for 17 years. He will definitely have a fundraising advantage, as you just mentioned. He's a high-profile name that seems to work well lately in Democratic politics in Virginia. Realistically, just looking at it from a non-biased point of view as I can, he should be favored to win. There's another thing, too. If I'm not mistaken, only Virginia and New Jersey have gubernatorial races next year. So a lot of high-profile Democrats from around the country can concentrate on a race like that. He's got connections with these people. They could help him a lot. It's actually be a good time for a guy like Terry McAuliffe to run for a governor of a state like Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think he'd have the backing of two pretty good names, both the Clintons. Done a lot to them over the years. I mean, I've heard the stories of the arm twisting he did just this time for Hillary Clinton on her campaign. Some of it unsuccessful, but pretty hard.
Well, thank
you. He's done all
Let me throw this question at you guys. Because of what's been happening in Virginia lately, how well Democrats have been doing, would securing the nomination be tantamount to victory?
I don't know. I think it's a great question because, you know, there's still those Republican, ties. But I will tell you this. Can't y'all see this commercial where they talk about him wrestling the alligator to raise money for Jimmy Carter, and then he can talk about, hey, imagine what I'll do for the people of Virginia if I'm willing to wrestle an alligator for political donations.
Watch out, he'll hire you.
That's what I'm saying. I just don't know. I mean, is that a plus, you think, Catherine, or a negative, you know, trying to use something like that as a, you know, showing how hard he'll work?
Well, I think he'll use all those things. You know, he'll attempt to use all those things to his advantage. He's a very, you know, slick operator. I'll be interested to see what kind of pushback he gets from the, you know, sort of, to use a very overused phrase, from the grassroots. You know, I think he's going to get all the high profile, you know, the Clintons and their camp and all that, but, you know, it'll be kind of interesting to see how the blogs and the, you know, sort of progressives and the people who are more left of center, see how they respond to him, because he's been very DLC and he's very much a, you know, political animal. I'm kind of surprised that he's, you know, I was kind of surprised to learn that he was running, because he seems like more of a political animal than a governor, than a, you know, someone who's really interested in government. You know what I mean? Like, he seems like the, you know, back of the...
Kingmaker instead of a king.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More of a kingmaker. Exactly.
Yeah, he's definitely a political animal that you just... I mean, I know he made money. I've actually listened to his biography, and I tell you what, I forgot how many discs on audio. And I can't tell you still after listening to that exactly how he made all his money. So apparently it wasn't a big thing to him making all that money. You got the idea that he wanted the money so he could have the freedom to have the fun to work in politics. I mean, not that he doesn't have certain things he wants to see for the good of the people, but you can tell he loves the game more than anything.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe he just is getting a little older and wants to, you know, sort of make an impression on history or whatever. You know, sometimes that happens.
And you say older, and did you know he's only 51, which...
oh, my God, you're kidding. He's my age?
He's 51.
Oh, I would have thought he was older.
And so he's really done a lot in that amount of time, I guess, because he got in early in politics. You know, I mean, because basically the way he tells the story when he wrestled the alligator during the 80 campaign, you know, it got up to the point where the, you know, president knew about it and said, tell this guy he didn't have to do that. I don't care if he wrestles. We don't need the money that bad for somebody to get their arm bit off or a hand bit off. And so it's just one of those intriguing stories. And it's definitely a race we'll follow. Like Tim said, it's one of the two races in 2007. And since our friends at Blue New Jersey will have New Jersey covered, I guess it's our job to cover Florida being a southern state. I'm Florida, being Virginia being a southern state. Well, I know John's going to call in here in a minute, but another state that had a little bit of political news, the state of South Carolina, they were talking about how they can fill two races. They have a governor's race. And they have a, and that'll be an open seat with Mark Sanford being term limited. And they'll have a U.S. Senate race with a very, very conservative Jim DeMint running for reelection for his first reelection. But they really don't have a bench in South Carolina. Tim, just looking at what you saw, what do you make of their bench?
Yeah, that was the first point I was going to make. The bench is awfully thin. Now, South Carolina is still a red state, albeit not as red as it was. There have been a lot of transplants of Democratic-leaning voters, specifically out on the coast. But inland, it's still tough sledding. David, I got to be honest, Jim DeMint is going to be extremely difficult even for a good candidate to beat.
Boy, I'd love to beat that guy. I can't stand
him. Yeah. But
I mean, really,
got to be real, though.
To say how conservative he is, he makes Lindsey Graham look moderate.
Horrible.
Yeah, he's that conservative. Well, Catherine, what's your first thought on the South Carolina situation?
Well, I haven't looked at all the links that you sent earlier, but I think Tim's right. You know, their bench is shallow, and it is a conservative state. And
oh, and the Piedmont area is just it's tough up through there. Oh.
Yeah. Now, Wendy Davis, who was our guest last week, she made a comment about how well Democrats, you know, gained in South Carolina. You know, people expected Georgia to gain and North Carolina to gain because in Virginia because of demographic shifts. But South Carolina's a state that really had a lot of demographic shifts. Yet they really had just as much gain as Georgia, for instance, and not that much less than South Carolina. So that was real hopeful, but. Do they have anything to build momentum?
But David, was it all about the presidential race? Remember, landslides do not stop at state lines.
That's what you have to think. You have to think a lot of it was new registration. Will folks come out? I will tell you this. I did see that they mentioned the Charleston mayor finally, you know, making another race. And apparently he's been a mayor for like 33 years, 9 terms. I guess 4-year terms. He's just won again recently, so I guess he would be, if he can hold one seat and run for another, he could run without risk. But it'd be interesting to see if this man, the mayor's name escapes me, runs, because, you know, he's a Charleston mayor, but kind of business friendly. I guess the business people there in the Charleston area like him. Maybe he could have some appeal and give them some hope. But I think John Flex called in. Welcome, John.
Hello. How y'all doing?
Hi, John.
Good.
Happy New Year.
Hey, John.
Happy New Year to y'all.
Yes, and speaking of a new year, in the new year, you decided to take on quite a project and kind of really do a total revamp of Tondi's Tavern. What inspired you to do this?
Well, I think it's fair for you to question my sanity.
Inspired, not a harsher word.
I get the presumption in that question, no doubt. No, really, I think, you know, just trying to follow through on some original ideas we had when we started Tondi's in the first place. And I think for folks who have followed, I've known for a long time that I had some problems with some of the underlying functions that the original site had. So what turned out to be a small move, just trying to fix some of those bugs that were in the old site turned into quite a pretty big effort. And we're not done, and there's going to be some work to do, but we're happy, I think, with where we are right now.
Yeah, and so tell us about some of those new features, just technically, what some of the new Thanksful can see.
Well, I hope we don't have to talk too much about the technical stuff, because that's
well,
really
yeah, the Thanksful can see. I mean, yeah, not the black, the back-end code and whatnot.
No. I think mostly the look and feel is similar, and we didn't really try and change the flavor about what Tondi's Tavern is about. So when you look at it, the visual changes, I think, are subtle. But what we did do is we tried to come up with a different way that we arrange the content. And really, the most important part of the change was bringing the new voices to the table, not nearly as big as changing the structure of the site. I mean, bringing Safest Houses and Georgia Women Vote to the table was a much bigger improvement than what we'd ever do on the back end of a site or functionality and all that stuff, because it brings more rich content and new voices and really good writers. So, I mean, the biggest change was bringing the new folks on board. But just, you know, in terms of what the site does now, is that we've really begun to get to a place where we've got an aggregative blog spot where you have multiple blogs that kind of roll up to a front page that is a gateway to that content. So that's really what the new blog is about. And we try and highlight that in such a way on the front page that when folks come, they can kind of understand where we are in an aggregate way. And then if they want to dig in deeper and look at all the different voices that we have at the site, that they're able to do that.
Yes. I'll go ahead and pass it off to Catherine. Catherine, what are some of your questions?
It looks great. I'm glad Thunder's got his own little soapbox. That's nice.
Well, and you know, I'm actually still looking at, too. I haven't even mentioned it to him. But at some point, I'd like to bring him a Cover It Live type function for Ed. Right.
Oh, that'd be great.
So
he loves that.
Yeah.
And I think it's always fun.
Yeah, so if
we did a real brief one on New Year's Eve for a wedding that we were all watching.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of something I'm looking at. I don't know if I really want to take that on right now, but, you know, that's right in Ed's wheelhouse.
Well, it looks great. I haven't had a chance to explore it completely, but it looks really good. I like the way you've highlighted the new voices, and I like the way it looks like you've pulled out, correct me if I'm wrong, but happy hour is just sort of a kind of general conversation area. Is that right?
Yeah, it maybe that bears a little point now, is that we've got distinct blogs. So there are folks that write for Tondi's that have, and then we've got new folks that write, and they have their own blogs there. That's their place to talk about whatever they want to. One of the things that I'd wanted to do for a long time but really didn't have a way to do it at the old site was to focus, one, on a place where folks could talk whenever they wanted to about things that were not political. So now we're picking, you know, NFL playoff games, which, you know, Philly's going to kill me. But
which is very exciting for me, I'm sure you realize.
Yeah. you know, we wanted to talk about things not political because, you know, there are peaks and valleys to the political seasons, and there are also non-political stuff that's fun to talk about. So we wanted to have a place
there
where
is? Really? Yeah,
there really is.
Wow. I'll have to check that out.
So we wanted to have a place to do that, and that's really happy hour. One of the things that we haven't really got done yet that's coming is getting to a better place with user-submitted diaries. That's kind of one thing that I gave up a little bit in the move that I've got to find a way to put back in, and I think that lives in the happy hour space. The second thing was the barrel room, and the barrel room was kind of a place where can we have long-form discussions that are kind of wonky in nature, or where would we put viewpoints from, say, elected officials who wanted to share their views with the community. So we wanted to do maintain the ability for people to have their own independent places to talk about what they wanted to talk about, but then have a couple of different places where one was wonky and long form and very policy oriented, and then another place where folks could just hang out and talk about whatever.
Well, nice work, John. I know it must have been a lot of work, and I hope that you still had a chance to celebrate Christmas.
Of course.
Yeah, Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, the first thing I saw when I saw this new format is it really does look like it would require a great deal more maintenance, shall we say, than the old format. What about that, you as one of the site administrators, does it?
Yes. yes, kind of. I mean, you know, it's really, and this is a little technical, but it really does have a completely different back end than the old place. When we originally started Tondi's Tavern, we went to Soapbox because that's where a lot of the state blogs, a lot of the progressive state blogs were using Soapbox, and it's very straightforward. You post a diary and you're done. And obviously, when you start to add new functionality, which we've done, which is hosting your own multimedia, doing some stuff around podcasts, being able to do things like self-host NFL playoff picks, obviously there's a lot more behind the scenes that goes to supporting that functionality. So from an administrative perspective, there's a lot of additional stuff that's back there. But what I think is important in all of it is that even though us administrators have a good bit more to do in the back, it's still very easy and straightforward for a user. So we wanted to try and maintain the ease of use for users that would come by, meaning that it's still easy to comment, it's still easy to write a diary, it's easy to log in and upload photos or connect with a friend or, you know, do all the stuff that's there at the site. We wanted to maintain that ease of use, but, yeah, in the back end there's a whole lot more stuff.
And I guess the second question ties right in with that, and you were just talking about the users or the people that I would refer to as the regular posters. What has their general reaction been to this new format?
Well, Ed doesn't like it. He's made that very clear to me. But I think generally I have not got any negative complaints. Sometimes silence is not golden. you shouldn't assume that silence is a good thing. But the only feedback I've really gotten on this site has been positive. So I take that as a plus, and in this case, I'll accept that silence is golden. You know, we also did it at a time where readership and folks who are, you know, plugged into this kind of stuff is typically down. I mean, we did it over the holidays when readership is lower. So as we get past the new year and as more, you know, exciting things begin to happen which drive readership, well, I'm sure we'll hear about it.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yeah, definitely. I think this has more power. I mean, if you look at all of the Georgia blogs, this has the most power and the most functionality. So that's definitely something, if I think people learn to use it, they'll enjoy. Now, I actually noticed I got on there, I actually uploaded a picture because, of course, I have a profile and can post it. And as I posted a picture and tried to do a few things to, you know, kind of bring myself up with some of the other posters. But I did notice something called karma, and I have like half a green leaf. What exactly is karma? I mean, I know what karma is in the My Name is Earl and Hindu sense, but what is it on Tondi's Tavern?
Frankly, David, karma is something that's likely to disappear very shortly.
Okay, so...
let me just start with that. I think the design use for that is the more that you do things within the community aspects of the site, the more you're rewarded with good karma.
Really?
I don't really like it, and I haven't really gotten my hands wrapped around the way that it gives out points. It's a plug-in, and it's likely to come out. So don't worry. You have good karma in my book. I hope good things come to you. that half a grain is absolutely no reflection of your karmic status, David.
I'm looking, John. You're doing more than anybody on the site, and it looks like you've got about two-thirds of green leaves. So obviously they're pretty stingy with their karma.
Well, I think that karma, two-thirds of a leaf might actually be a good reflection of my overall karma, but that would be by accident. But no, that's probably something that's you know, we're growing and changing and we're doing all kinds of stuff. That's probably going to end up in the garbage can.
Well, are there any things that we don't see here that you envision for the near future, I should say?
Probably not near future. I mean, I think what you'll see in near future is what we've talked about but have not done yet, which is some podcasting and vodcasting. So you're likely to see that. I think you'll see us get into a little better place with video. I think I want to take some time and invest in a little bit of video. And I'm not exactly sure how that will shape up yet. So there are different elements to the site. So as JMAC starts, you know, cover two again and Safe at Home, and we do some podcasts on the legislative session. I mean, those things that we're advertising will occur that aren't there now. I'm not really sure about real core function type ads at this point. I think what we've got is probably what we go with for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anything else you want to share with us about Tondi's Tavern or politics in general?
Politics in general. I don't know. I called in a little late, so I've not had an opportunity to hear what you guys have talked about yet today. But I'm always up for politics in general.
Yeah.
Anybody know what Poitras posted for his money at the end of this year?
I do not know that. I got him being the only announced candidate. I guess any money he's raised puts him ahead of everybody else. I guess those disclosures will start rolling in soon. And that's one thing we need on the Kudzu Vines. We need somebody to be our disclosure person, so somebody's listening, and they love reading these things and have a good sense of, you know, what and what. I've always thought about that, and I've actually approached somebody before, but they were so deep into it, they didn't want to, you know, they didn't feel comfortable coming on and sharing what they knew. But you're right, that is one of the first things that'll come up that'll be of import.
Well, and I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, only in that I think the big, I guess maybe it's something that concerns me a little bit, just in general about where we are. I had just to share a quick personal story, that I sat down with for lunch here in Forsyth County with a very prominent Republican, and the conversation we had about state-level politics was very interesting because we were in a place where a lot of the Republican candidates that will run in 2010 are very out there, are very open about their aspirations, and they're actually doing stuff to build support. And it's not really a big surprise to anybody, you know, that's kind of paying attention to these things, that they're out there and they're doing that. But at the same time, in that conversation, I felt really hamstrung because we don't have that same level of conversation taking place on our side, so which is why I kind of throw out Poitras. We know that he's out there doing some preliminary things. But we still have not really heard much about who's seriously considering running for governor, let alone any of the other races that are going to be down the ballot. So,
and I'm really interested in some of the other, especially the Secretary of State race.
Yep, and you know, I've heard a couple of names about people who might be interested. But there hasn't been, in my mind, a very public discussion. And what I think will be interesting is, in this legislative session that's coming up, you know, last legislative session, and it's, of course, it's supposed to be that way because they own the government right now, but all we really did was heard the Republican voices. It was Sonny and Casey and Richardson. And you got to wonder at what point where will some of the folks that aspire to some of these offices get involved in some of the issues that are likely to come up. And maybe that'll be a tip of the hat to tell us maybe who some of these folks are that are thinking about running.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and thank you for all your work on Tondi's Tavern. And we're going to keep, you know, watching it. And, of course, three of us read that as a source of information for our show. So it's vital to what we do.
Well, I appreciate that.
Thanks,
you guys,
John.
Are great. All right.
Thanks, John.
Y'all
have a wonderful
anything, episode. You have a platform here.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Bye.
Okay.
All right. Well, Tim, it's about that time. Go ahead and give us the outrage of the week.
All righty. Senator Norm Coleman's campaign tried to stop the recount in Minnesota this week. Does that sound familiar? This is what the Republicans seem to always want to do since they were so successful with it back in 2000. Go to court, and go to court some more until they can find a court to see things their way. At the time the Coleman campaign was trying this, only 49 votes separated Coleman from Al Franken. At issue was 933 absentee ballots that had been improperly rejected. Obviously, the Coleman campaign thought that counting these ballots would favor Franken, and they were right. Yet earlier, the Coleman campaign had agreed to include the very ballots that they then protested inclusion of. As it turned out, the state Supreme Court has issued no ruling on this yet, so the counting continued. It concluded yesterday with Franken the apparent winner by about 225 votes. On Tuesday of this coming week, the state canvassing board will meet for the purpose of confirming the result. Now, notice that I did not say it would name a winner, and that is because of two things in Minnesota. First, the governor has to sign off on the results. And who knows if and when Governor Pawlenty, who is a Republican, will even do that. I guarantee you, though, that if Coleman was ahead by 225 votes, that Pawlenty would be getting out his pen right now. And second, under the election laws of Minnesota, candidates have 7 days after the result is certified to file a post-election contest. Obviously, Coleman, the apparent loser, is going to do that. Why? Well, mainly because at the end of the thing, the Minnesota Supreme Court stands there, and it's mostly Republican. In the meantime, Minnesota's other senator, Amy Klobuchar, has suggested that Franken be seated on a provisional basis in the U.S. Senate. That prompted Senator Cornyn of Texas to threaten a GOP filibuster, even though the Democratic leadership has no intention of even seating Franken. Cornyn, you see, is the chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and he saw a good chance to score some political points. Plus, if Franken were seated, he would look legitimate, and Coleman kept going to court on this thing, it would look like he was trying to steal the election from the winner. Of course, Coleman at this point is trying to do just that, since the result shows him behind. And as a Democrat right now, let me warn all of my fellow Democrats that as long as this thing is in the courts, that any celebration of victory would be a bit premature. Because the Republicans are drawing from their tried and true blueprint of how to win in this situation. They did it in 2000. So watch. They will use the legal system to delay, delay, and delay some more. This thing could go on for months. In the meantime, Minnesota is minus one senator, and the U.S. Senate is minus one more Democratic vote. But unless some new votes surface, then all votes have been counted. And the count has produced a winner. That winner is Al Franken. And at some point, I hope the people of Minnesota realize that Coleman's campaign is just doing the court thing because they didn't get the desired result. You know, I remember some time back when Norm Coleman said that he would be, and I quote, a 99% improvement over Paul Wellstone. He actually said this just a few weeks after Senator Wellstone was tragically killed in a plane crash. So for one, I'll be glad if this weasel loses. And nothing would tickle me more than for him to lose it like this in a seat he won by accident, David.
Tim, great work again. Catherine, any thoughts on the Minnesota recount?
These guys, if they don't get what they want, I mean, it's back to what we were talking about earlier with when we were talking about the Hawks. They don't get what they want, so they just try to change the rules or play by different rules. It's really, it's just shocking. It's shocking.
Yep, absolutely.
It reminds me of something that I often say. You know, these guys always talk about how, you know, government is the enemy. And you know, for all the criticism of the government, they sure do try hard to be in the government. You know what I mean? Like, they always, you know, we go back to Reagan and government is the enemy and, you know, get rid of big government and all that. But they sure do work hard and try to cheat to get in to this government that they are so disgusted with.
David, realistically, don't you think it's going to be months before Minnesota has another senator?
It's sad, but it may be that long. I mean, obviously, it seems like you get to a point where you know, you've counted the votes all now. You've looked through the provisional ballots, all those different ballots that need to be looked through. And there's really no end game if you look at all the analysis for Norm Coleman. But will he be willing to see this? I don't know. I hope so. But for the people in Minnesota. And I don't know. Have y'all seen any polling on how the people in Minnesota feel about all this?
I've seen a lot of the blogosphere talk with some of the local newspapers up there, and the people of Minnesota are ready to declare a winner and move on. Well, now that winner is apparent, or it is to me. If there are no more votes left to count, and he's 225 votes ahead, well, then what is the point of this continuing?
Yeah, what part of he's the winner do you not understand?
Yeah, really. I mean, they need to, you know, they need to get this thing over with because it's over. Now, after they certify the results Tuesday, what's Coleman going to do? Are they going to take this thing to court? Well, you know what? Unfortunately, I think that's exactly what they're going to do.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Oh, yeah, they will. I'll be shocked if they don't take it to court.
I don't know what
their challenge is going to be, but.
Well, apparently they're going to try to get a lot of votes thrown out that were counted. That's the only angle I can figure because they got no more votes to find.
Yes, and that's a totally bad look. I mean, you know, you disenfranchising voters because then, you know, it's like, well, they shouldn't have voted because, and that's, I mean, never a good scene to be in unless the person absolutely should not have been voting because they were a felon or dead or, which you're just not going to find very much of that, I mean, if any.
No.
And so you're just going to
find
them all.
You ain't going to find 226 of them.
Certainly not. And so, and by the way, as we were just having the last few minutes of the show, the blog Not Larry Sabado, I happened to see the first word on Terry McAuliffe from Folks in Virginia. And the blogosphere in Virginia, I will say, is not not very optimistic about Terry McAuliffe. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, talking about how Hillary Clinton didn't do well and maybe he can run his campaign. But one of the nastier comments, hopefully he uses his millions to hire a speech therapist, which I've never known him to have speech issues. That's a little rough. But I will say that I did see his video was posted. I hadn't had a chance to listen to it. But I will say there are a lot of jerking head movements on the video. So if you get a chance to check that out at notlarrysabado.com, you can see the initial comments on that. Also, another thing we didn't get to, it looks like that we may have a new DNC chair selected. Notice I didn't say elected, but we got to save topics for another week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're at the end of the
there
show, but there's a whole, I guess, 51 more to go. I may not even check my calendar right. You never know. It could be two Sundays hitting the year, and we actually have 52 more to go. So,
well, thanks, guys. It's good to be back.
Good to have you back.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
See you later.